This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Abong Udama. A Ukrainian family fled a war and found a home in Connecticut.
The first year or two were particularly difficult for the family. It was a shock in many ways, both in terms of culture, but also in terms of the professions that were available to them.
That's Shahzad Rezek, a Connecticut Mirror photojournalist. She's done a deep dive into the challenges of trying to find a foothold in Connecticut for a Ukrainian family that fled the war. More to come after this.
Hi, I'm Bruce Putterman, publisher of the Connecticut Mirror. By participating in the work of CT Mirror, you publish long-form journalism that explains complex policy and fiscal issues. You conduct follow-the-money investigations that explore how taxpayer dollars are spent. And you empower communities and change lives and stabilize our wobbling democracy. If you want to continue to be a part of this Connecticut journalism success story, please make a gift to CT Mirror today. Just click the red donate button on the top right of any CT Mirror page. Thank you.
Hello, Shahzad. How did you come across the Natsevich family? And why did you think their story would make such a compelling photo essay?
Hi. Yeah, so I realized that Ukraine had just fallen out of the news cycle, and I was looking for local ways to be able to cover this issue, given it still exists. We're just not hearing about it as much. And so I wanted to find a personal angle that could tell the story that we know through numbers, but this time through a personal perspective, and kind of follow one family's journey from Ukraine to Connecticut and kind of see how the war is affecting people in Ukraine, but also what services they were able to benefit from and what their experience was like as a Ukrainian family in Connecticut. And so I connected with them through this one woman that my colleague Laura Tillman had met at a different event, who happened to just be Ukrainian. She works at Yale. And just by nature of being Ukrainian and being connected with the community, she happened to know this family and gave me their number. And I called her out of the blue, and she was gracious enough to be open about the idea. And we just clicked. And from there, it made it much easier to kind of follow them through this process of resettlement.
Was the fact that she had these Instagram posts of what was happening in Odessa when the war came, was that quite helpful to you?
I actually didn't know her Instagram or hadn't seen her Instagram before reaching out to her. It did help that she had already been open about her experience. Some people don't want to think about it or don't want to process what they've experienced yet. But because she kind of had this disposition of wanting to share this information, it made it easier to kind of dig deeper and ask questions that might have been intrusive to some. She just wanted to be able to share this experience, and she just had fewer barriers than most people.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about their experience. What was their experience like?
Sure. So Evgeny and her husband Vitaly were living in Odessa. They were from Ukraine. They've lived there their whole lives, and their whole families are there. That's their home. And Odessa happens to be right on the Black Sea, relatively close to Crimea. It's the largest city that's that close to Crimea.
It also has the largest port that for Ukraine right now.
Correct. And so, I mean, since 2014, when Crimea was annexed, it was kind of in this fragile position geographically. And Evgeny and her husband's home happened to be near a military outpost that they worried would be a target on February 24th when they first saw these missiles flying overhead. And in that instant, they decided to just try to go somewhere safer. It was kind of a shot in the dark where they went. They went to Vitaly's parents' home, which unfortunately happened to be even closer to the front lines. The battle for Kyiv was happening as they were sheltering underground. Eventually, they were able to make it out to Germany. And after a while, they found their way to the US. They actually connected while they were in Germany with man in Arkansas who wanted to sponsor people coming in on U4U. So U4U.
Now, U4U is a special a visa that was created by the Biden administration for Ukrainian refugees, correct?
Correct. So U4U was a program that existed, that was created for these Ukrainians who were caught in the heart of this war, and that was recently paused in January 2025, along with a set of other statuses like TPS, temporary protective status, which is relevant to the story because people who have come on U4U on the earlier side, who were no longer eligible to renew U4U, are now trying to resort to TPS to be able to stay here. So those people are also in a fragile position where most of the programs that have been available to them in the past are now paused, leaving them in this space of uncertainty.
And you use this family to illustrate the type of assistance that refugee families were getting that they no longer have access to.
Yeah, so organizations like CIRI and IRIS here in Connecticut have seen major cuts to funding and programs and services that they're able to offer. This family was lucky enough to be part of the last groups of people who were able to receive these services, but Ukrainians who have similar life experiences to this family who are only now trying to leave will not be able to reach the same places that this family was able to reach because all of the services that were available to them along the way have now been impacted by either cuts or just not existing anymore.
Now, how has the family itself, how have they adjusted to being in America, and are they still in Connecticut?
The first year or two were particularly difficult for the family. It was a shock in many ways, both in terms of culture, but also in terms of the professions that were available to them. This is a young couple and they were pretty career forward in terms of their outlook on life. And they arrived in this country where one of them doesn't really speak the language. And he had been a manager in a food company, a regional manager. And so jumping from that to changing tires and coming home and smelling like this burnt plastic was a huge change. It would have been a huge change even if they had just stayed in Ukraine. So that alone, and then not being able to speak the language, not knowing how to access certain services, all of that was a huge change for them. And once they reached Connecticut, they and Vitaly had this job that was similar to what he had in Ukraine. Then they kind of started to find their footing. And one thing that Evgenia particularly credited and that I mentioned in the piece is that Connecticut's social services and the different organizations that exist within the state kind of reduce these barriers.
You specifically mentioned the children being able to get onto Husky and being able to get some medical treatment that they hadn't been able to for quite a while.
Yeah. So during the first few days of the war, or even before it started, Angelina, who is Evgenia's youngest daughter, had started to experience tooth pain, obviously caught in the whirlwinds of war and not being able to seek proper medical attention safely. This treatment was delayed and they reached Arkansas, then they reached Florida and tried to seek medical treatment there. But the barrier of not having insurance was just too big. And so they had to wait until Connecticut. And fortunately for them, Connecticut's immigrant insurance programs and the barriers that are reduced compared to other states were very helpful in allowing them to seek the treatment that they needed. And Angelina has been able to follow through and complete the medical treatment that she had needed since leaving Ukraine.
Well, that's fantastic. In the meantime, the services that were made available to them are no longer available. So what's the situation with that going forward? Will we be able to preserve any of these services, or they're just gone?
Well, in the case of IRIS, for example, they've had to close an entire office. So it seems like the future, I mean, some of these services just no longer exist. Entire portions of staff have been laid off in the past few months. And so it seems like we're in a pretty bleak position. Individual funding can't necessarily make up for all of this government funding that these organizations have lost. So I wish I had a better answer, but so far the future of these organizations seems rather dire.
However, this particular family has been able to tie into the local Ukrainian community, and that has been a lot of help to them.
That's correct. So, I mean, even just the way that I was able to connect with this family was through the Ukrainian community, by nature of just getting breakfast with one Ukrainian woman based in New Haven and chatting about the Ukrainian community that exists within Connecticut. I was able to connect with this family.
Well, Shahzad, thank you so much. I really appreciate this story. It gives a little bit of an insight into what refugees are facing now.
Thank you.
Long Story Short is hosted by me, Ebon Rudana, and produced by Molly Ingram. Harriet Jones is our editor. WSHU's Alicia Daddario and the Connecticut Mirror's Gabby DeBenedictis are our digital team. This podcast is a collaboration between the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. We go behind the scenes at the home of public policy journalism in Connecticut. More can be found online at ctmirror.org and wshu.org. Our episodes can be found wherever you get your podcasts.